double digits. It's episode 10 of Flippers Always Win. I am your host, Flip. Thank you so much for tuning in. Look how far we've come. Real far. Like super far. And we have a packed episode yet again today, so I'll keep it short at the beginning. But just like last week, I want to give a quick shout out to a current player on Survivor 47. That would be the focus of our social media deep dive last week, Sue Smay. We reached out to her. We tagged her, just like we did with Saul the week before. She also responded, loved what we did, hosted the podcast to her story. Sue, we love you, and we're rooting for you. Saul's out of the game, so there's no conflict of interest in who we're rooting for the rest of the way here until the next person responds and posts us. But you all know that Sue is my OG winner pick, so can't see anybody toppling her at this point. Thank you so much to Sue for her kindness and for taking the time to interact with the pod here. We have a great show coming up. We have Drew. And after that, we have a fantastical thing. You don't want to miss it. Either of them. They're both great. We'll be right back after this message. Hi, I'm Flip, the host of Flippers Always Win. We have no sponsorships on this podcast, so in place of an ad, I would like to talk to you about the non-existent ABC app through Roku. There used to be an app for ABC that you could watch, and apparently it no longer exists, which is an issue tonight because Alan Weintraub, otherwise known as my father, is coming over to watch the Ravens game on Monday night. But beforehand, he wanted to watch his favorite show, Jeopardy, famously on ABC. And I don't have it. And sure, there's probably another bootleg or roundabout way to watch, but I'm not going to put that type of effort into this an hour ahead of time. I got things to do, like do the other ads and outro and grab Chinese food and even get dressed. So sorry, Al. Screwed. The ABC app. Where'd it go? Well, we are back on Flippers Always Win, episode 10, with our guest, Drew. Drew is somebody who, in my younger years, I knew very well, and now we're getting back into touch. It's great to see you again. Great to catch up. You're one of the bigger, I guess, most veteran, one could say, Survivor fans that I've had on probably the most so far. So I'm super excited to hear your thoughts on this season and the game at hand. But first of all, how are you doing, Drew? Thanks for coming on.
I'm doing amazing. What an honor to be on, Flip. I was tickled that you would want to have me on to talk about one of my favorite things, Survivor. I've been very, very good. How about you?
Oh, I appreciate that you're tickled. I'm doing well. Super happy to have you on. I know this is going to be a nice Survivor conversation, as all the other ones have. But you've been a fan since the beginning, right? Like since the very beginning.
Yeah. My first episode was Ramona's Boot on Borneo. Spoiler alert. Then I watched Australia and then had a big crush on Elizabeth. That was interesting over time.
That aged well.
Yeah, right. And then I didn't see 3 through 7 live. And I came back during All-Stars. And then I went back and watched. And I've watched live since All-Stars on. So I've only not seen like 5 live. All-Stars, I was super excited. I think I was watching football and I saw like the ad for All-Stars and I was like, holy crap, like, yes, I'm back in. So yeah, I always loved it. I don't know why, you know, it was a different time where you would like miss something and just never see it again.
Yeah, you couldn't like pick it back up on streaming.
Right. I caught up on the Outdoor Life Network, which is not even a channel anymore.
And known as OLN at the time. That's a vague.
Correct. Yes. They used to air 3 episodes a night. It was before the binge and I TiVo'd all of them.
One of the ones that I've never seen actually is All-Stars. And I've heard and read that it's actually universally almost disliked, maybe because it was a little bit of a disappointment on who did well at the time. Do you have a different opinion on All-Stars than most of the community?
I don't think it's great. I like when it's contentious at the end, and it's a very contentious season at the end. It's not in the upper half, but I don't think it's the worst thing ever. It's like, you know, you get to hang out with your friends. These are like the original All-Stars. They were like larger than life back then. To me, I was, you know, a kid at the time.
Yeah, icons. And that's really what they were at the time, because there was no social media. There were less channels. Like, these were your reality stars. What about the show is what gets you going, both back in the day or if it's changed now? What are your motivations to watch?
For me, it has always been my dream to be on the show. I could never be a professional athlete, but Survivor was something that, like, I could always project myself into the TV and see, like, oh, I can win that. The things you need to win the game, I think, are the things that I'm naturally strongest at. So I've always been drawn of, like, I'm going to win $1 million. I'm going to win the show that I love. And it would be like a dream come true.
For you, what are the things that you're good at that you see as winning traits out there on the island?
I think just being able to connect with people is, you never know your situation. So being able to connect and adapt is, like, that's it, right? That's who the best players are. People are going to vote for who they like. They're not going to vote for someone who's an a-hole. And you have to just have the social relationships to be able to make whatever strategic moves you need to make at that time.
And you work in sales, and this is a very transferable skill to what you do out there. What are some similarities that you use in your real life at work that transfer well onto the island beyond just, oh, you're good with people?
Getting people to trust you is sales. People, they don't want to be sold. There's the connotation that salespeople are, you know, scummy, and you have to get people to trust you. You have to get people to lower their guard. You have to work together to come to a solution for what they need. And Survivor's the same way, right? If you can get them to think it's their idea in sales, that's amazing. In Survivor, if you can get people to think their plan is their plan when it's actually your plan, that's great. But it's all about, how do I get people to, I keep using this word, connect with me, to trust me, so we can have a real honest conversation. And that, to me, is what the game is.
Do you prefer a short sales cycle or a long sales cycle? In Survivor, the older seasons were more of a longer cycle, literally. Nowadays, it's a short, fast cycle. So as a salesman, which do you prefer? And if you were out on the island, which do you think you would prefer?
Salesperson, short sales cycle. I want instant gratification. On the island, I think I would do better in a longer form game. But I think, you know, if you want to play Survivor now, you better be able to adapt. You better be able to play the new way. So to me, I would just want any Survivor flip. Any.
I feel you. It makes sense that any salesman would want the instant gratification. You want it quicker. But you're saying that it actually, you have a better chance the older way. So why the difference there?
I've watched the show from when I was like 11 years old to now. I'm 36, right? Who am I on the island now? There's not that many spots. I'm getting into the realm of, like, I'm going to be one of the oldest people on the island. So I'm not going to have as much common ground as a lot of the younger people, right? I don't have TikTok. I don't have a lot of social media right now. So I'm not in the scene. I'm a parent now. Like, my references are not the same as what they are. So I probably need a little bit more time to get to know people. Whereas when I was in my, like, mid 20s, it's like easy. It's like, oh yeah, we're all the same age. You can kind of connect with people easier on stuff.
And I can see 100% like your reasoning for that. But I almost think of it actually the other way, is like, if you're not on the same level, and if you're not connecting with them, do you feel like the more time that you have, the more that you wouldn't have to connect with them, like it would fall apart? Whereas if you don't have as much in common with them in a short cycle, it's like that isn't as evident. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I disagree, because I think most people suck. And I think the longer you spend with them, you see that they suck. And I think I'm amazing. And I think the longer you spend with me, you see my true essence.
I mean, you can't argue with that. I won't, right?
Think of the people on this season, right? Like, I actually think if in a long season, Rome, I think eventually Rome will get to the point where he stops all his BS, and like we get to see the true Rome, and like we probably like something about him. But like, it's short Survivor, so like he's going to come off inherently unlikable. He's going to be entertaining for the show, but there's definitely something likable about the guy.
Tell me what that is.
Who knows? There's something real that we didn't see, right? We didn't see anything real about him. If he tells us a real moment, or we get a real moment where he's on the beach, like, there's probably something you would like about everyone if you spend enough time with them.
We've been around enough people through the org community that I disagree with that. But in terms of Rome, we know we did, like, the last episode that he was on, he's telling his sob story rooted in truth, but he's acting in his confessional as if that was just a show, which I've talked about that in previous episodes. Nobody buys that.
everybody is like, no, that was real. And then you're just trying to front later. As maybe subconsciously he realized that maybe he was starting to be on the outs, even if he couldn't admit it to himself, I think you started seeing a more vulnerable side come out, to your point. Okay, like there is a real person under here somewhere, under this bravado and this fronting. And for some people, it comes down to, do you have a chance to let that come out? What does it take for that to actually come out? Tony, it took 3 seasons for that to come out. I was actually just watching a clip near the end of his final season where he was talking about, my first couple times I played, like, I wasn't Tony. I wasn't the real me. Now I've shown you me. And it's definitely a powerful thing when you're able to do that.
Yeah, that's an awesome thing about Survivor. Sometimes you get the arc in one season. Sometimes you like spend a ton of time with people, right? Sometimes you spend too much time with people. Like, I love Suri. We spend too much time with Suri, like enough.
Yeah, makes sense that it's hard to say, oh, this is where I stop. Especially if you're super successful at it and or you've been burned at the end of your last one. Like, that's the thing. If you win or you do really well, oh, I really want to do that again. If you lose, I have to rectify this. I have to get my revenge. I know I can do better. Like, next time is mine. And there's really just no end to it unless you tell yourself, like, I'm done. Intentionally move on. And I think a lot of people who go on this show, it's obviously like the highlight of their life. And a little bit like the Chris conversation, you get sucked into the people that you're around. That's your community. And so not only do you want it for yourself, but everybody around you is like gung-ho, like, we got to go do it again. Like, win, 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 get back out there. So, you know, it's consuming. It's very consuming and very tricky.
Yeah, I love what I love about this season in particular is people are finally upset when they lose. We're getting some people who are absolutely like wrecked, and that's how I would be, right? I think that's how you would be, Flip, right? Like, and we had too much good sportsmanship, so I'm happy that the bitterness is back.
Survivor 44, I believe, is the one that like a lot of people online, and I'm incessantly online, make fun of for that. If Franny got back on Survivor 50 and she gets voted out, yay, I got voted out. Like, that, there was the middle of that new era where everybody was like, I'm just happy to be here. Please get rid of me. That's not what we want. We want to see some heartache. That's why we tune in, for the drama, not for the it's fine. Let's talk about the actual social dynamics of it. What's one shift in the way that people play the game, the way that actually people interact? How is it different to you in a good way than what it used to be? And then what's one way in that particular realm where you preferred it when it was older?
I'm going to give you the same answer for both. It feels far less personal than it used to be, because I don't always want to leave a show that I love with like baggage or like a side or like think about that. I don't like it because sometimes I want to leave the show with some baggage and a side and a feud that lasts for 5 years until these people come back and they play again. And you're like, oh my gosh, they're playing together. You get these awesome long arcs that play out when stuff like that happens and there's animosity and you can see people evolve or they're the same.
For me, at least, what would differentiate it, whether I like it or dislike it, is, are the people entertaining personalities? Are they good game players? If you've got entertaining and good personalities and game players, are totally worth it. But if you've got like a mediocre season with people who just kind of bitched the whole time and didn't do too much in their feuding, like, I could care less, right? When it is personal in the new era, I would say generally it's been like, oh, these are mediocre people whining about nothing. That changed last season. I don't know how you feel about Survivor 46, but that by far was my favorite season of the new era. I felt like those were real beefs out there and they weren't afraid of being canceled. They weren't afraid of hurting somebody's feelings. And that is the part of the show that I genuinely miss. I don't want to see people being bullied. I don't want to see like hate. And there was a lot of that at times in older Survivor, a lot of like, yeah, like misogyny, racism, like stuff you just don't want to see. But I want to see a genuine conflict because of who you are.
I think you bring up the canceling point is probably a reason for a lot of the shifting of people's behavior, is people are now afraid to get canceled. So it's not going to go as far as it used to. And that wasn't a thing in older eras. But now you see, you know, people get canceled every week for something.
The casting is different now. They're casting people who are less likely to do things that would get them canceled or really in trouble. Why is that happening? A lot of it is obviously 2020, the culture changed, some things happened socially. But even before that, season 39, Island of the Idols, is when they had the terrible sexual harassment scandal, right? at the after show that, you know, the production handled it terribly. The players handled it terribly. The reunion show of that season, you know, Jeff sits down with Kelly Kim and issues a public apology and has a whole interview with her. And it's just the worst vibes that the show's ever had for good reason. Then 2020 happens, and the mandate, essentially, I think, of a combination of what happened on 39 and what's happened in the culture is like, you have to completely abandon what you have been the first 39 seasons, and you have to be completely fresh. And that's why it's interesting right now. It's happening last season and this season, where there is a little bit more getting at each other. And it feels like Jeff almost, I don't know your perception of this, it feels like he's a little uncomfortable with that, because I don't think he wants to get in trouble like they did.
I think the show has evolved so much, and it has evolved. Like, go back and watch Borneo. Watch some of the stuff that's unbleeped in Borneo. There's a specific word that is used many times in that season that is just wild, right?
Yeah. The fact that the show is a little bit less personal, understandable why it's happening, wish it could come back. Let's talk about what happens when things get personal in a pressure cooker. And what I mean by that is orgs. Let's do a quick conversation. Drew, you played in orgs. That's how we met, through Sequester. I talked with Chris a little bit about this. He played in orgs too. He played Survivor Maryland. So one, what is an org? And two, how did you get involved in them?
Yeah, so an org is an online reality game. I was 25. I lived in my parents' basement. I really wanted to be on the show Survivor. I wasn't super castable living out of my parents' basement. I saw on Facebook there was a Survivor game where you like chat with like 800 people. And Sandra was on like her page. She posted it and I signed up and I played this game. And I did well in this game. And I met these people, and then I was introduced to the org world. And there was like people who played Survivor online all day long, nonstop. And I wanted to be the best because I thought I would be the best on the island. So I did that for a couple years. Hopefully when you put all your time into something, you become good at it, right?
Ideally, I wouldn't know because I never have. What's the biggest one, like in terms of how many people started in it that you won?
I won a 42-person Survivor game. On like Google Hangout, it lasted probably like 50 days, something like that. It was almost like 2 months.
That's longer than a Survivor season. What's the biggest takeaway from how to be successful in a long-term environment like that?
My biggest takeaway is I need to stop doing this. The thing maybe I took away personally, like, is if you put every single thing you have into something, like, you can get what you want out of it. That was the biggest game I was ever in. It was the first game that I won, and I've been playing for like 9 months, not winning games. And then after I won that game, it was like, oh my gosh, I accomplished this goal that I had, and I could breathe a sigh of relief. And then it just made the games a lot more fun. I only played a couple after that. I won another one. I don't know. It was like a weight lift. It was just, it became a personal goal. Like, I got to win one of these games.
When we met, I was 21 and you were 28, 29. And I remember after we played together on our season, I got to know you a little bit more. Comment I think I remember was that I reminded you of you when you were a little younger playing these games. Is that accurate, or was that something I'm like misremembering?
No, I was very, I became very aggro, which I think you were a little bit, Flip, when my back was against the wall, which is not, it's not usually a winning strategy.
No. So I guess my question, just for the fun of it, for this podcast, then we'll get into the episode of Survivor that we've failed to get to in 2 hours. Yeah. You know, you've met a lot of people through these games. Yeah. Was there anybody else that reminded you more of you than me in these games? I assume there was at least a couple.
Don't think so, because most of the people who play these games were really like weird.
And I'm not. No,
you're weird, but we have the same like essence. We want like this. The motivation is like the same. I think we would react to things like the same. Like, it has to go well. Like, we talked about it. It has to go well for us. Like, I think I see like what you want is like the same thing I want. And I think other people are like, I would love to get a buff, or I would like, I can't wait to see what the name of my tribe is. Like, you roll your eyes, but like, that's what a lot of people think, right? Like, and those, if that's your mindset, you don't have the energy to be on the show.
Well, when we played, I had no knowledge, understanding, concept of this org world. I didn't know anything about it, and nobody anything. And I learned after we played that like you're very good at it. And I didn't know that when we played, but I sensed it. And without knowing anything, you felt like this is the mountaintop that I have to overcome to advance. It felt like two of the same sides of the magnet being like pretty much as close as possible, like within the game. A very interesting experience. We played twice together and basically ended up in weird ways just going next to each other two different times. I always wondered, what if it was 5-5? I lost 7-3. If that was 5-5, what was the backup plan?
Who can break out into tears on webcam more times?
I got it.
You're golden.
Fantastic, fantastic life experience. Awful. Would do it all again the exact same way. All right, so let's talk about episode 10 of Survivor. In the previous episode, Saul gets voted out. Genevieve made that happen. She goes back to camp. Teenie's pissed. And it appears that Genevieve realizes pretty quickly that maybe she underestimated how this would affect her relationship, not just with Teenie, but potentially with everybody. It seems like Genevieve has a big uh-oh moment, which, I don't know, for me and a lot of people I talked to in the previous episode is like, well, duh. So what did you think of her reaction and what were you thinking at the time is going to happen to her?
Teenie can't win. I'll just get that out of the way. I think Genevieve is actually a really good player. Yes, she underestimated the social impact that it would have on Teenie, but I think she can still recover.
Genevieve has this big edit of like, she's the one who's put together the big mastermind move so far. Genevieve, there's no really lowering her threat level after what she did. She can lower a little bit, but she's always going to be on people's radars. Gabe on people's radars, but there's a certain time with him, as they were saying. And I think they were like, Gabe is the more imminent we have to right now. Genevieve, we know she's too good for this and we're going to get her eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And they had to get one of Gabe's Tuku, right? They had to get a Tuku out. There's too many of them. You can't give them control because it would just make too much sense for them to work to stick together, even if they didn't want to stay together.
Right. And we have Genevieve realize, oh God, Teenie, you know, sort of implodes a little bit, takes it personally, which I understand. But watching it, I'm like, oh no, that wasn't about you, sweetheart. To be fair, Genevieve did say specifically before the last episode that she knows that this is going to burn her bridge with Teenie. So if you're going to give Teenie some sort of understanding of why they reacted that way, like Genevieve did actively say, I don't care about Teenie, essentially.
Yeah, I think the important thing to remember is when the people are playing the game, they are the hero in this story. So they think that the edit is all about them, right? Why wouldn't you? If you're on Survivor, you think the edit is all about you. So like if the edit's all about you, of course, every move that is made is against you.
Absolutely. You're in a bubble on the island and then you're in your own personal bubble within the bubble. And the way that you act normally in real life, the things that you like kind of just take and let go, it's not that simple.
A step further, when Gabe goes out, I'll be back. And then he says it again in his exit interview, right? Like he, again, thinks he's the hero of the story. Will we see Gabe again, Flip?
15% chance.
Yeah, I don't think we will either. I agree.
There are people who have lower percentage chance than that. Like he was somewhat entertaining. He was the closest thing that we've had to like a villain in a bit, right? And did he do enough in this game to see him again? No, but if you don't allow yourself to get out of the game, you will stay in the game forever. It's not good for your mental health. Another moment I want to jump to, because we had the reward challenge, which Kyle, Rachel, and Sam beasted. They go to have lunch together. They talk about potentially getting out Gabe. Rachel's like, I don't really know, whatever. They have the immunity challenge, which is almost the exact same one that was the first one after the merge, where Kyle and Sue are down to the final two balancing balls on a thing while balancing themselves. Almost the exact same challenge. Again, Kyle beats her out. Sue is like, you've got to be kidding me with this guy. Love Sue. Love the montage of her like, F you then. That's old Survivor right there. That's what we want to see. Before the immunity challenge starts, we have the negotiation where everybody gives up their shot in the dark in order to everybody be able to stay. And in order for that to happen, Sam is the one person who's hesitant about it, which I'm like, this is a really stupid thing for you to even vocalize this. You're really sinking your own ship now. I already don't think that he has the best standing in terms of what can he do to win the game. I think people don't really respect his game out there. I'm like, this is stupid. But then he gets saved because Gabe starts speaking up and Gabe starts revealing just why he's so much of a threat. He convinces, with air quotes, Sam to do this. Sam immediately recovers, Jeff throws him a softball, says, "So Gabe persuaded you," and he stifles his alpha desires and makes the right move and says, "Sure," and puts it immediately on Gabe as, yes, Gabe was the one who did this, which is the best possible thing that could happen to Sam and the worst possible thing that could happen to Gabe. I might be extrapolating that a little bit too much, and it's just like an exaggerated dramatic moment. Do you feel like that had impact?
Damage had been done. Mm-hmm. I think they both don't look good from it. It's easy to paint Gabe how you want to paint him. It's easy to paint Sam how you want it. Like, just don't talk, right? I think you can paint Carolyn a certain way for bringing that up in the first place. Also, I'm just going to throw this in. Carolyn can't win. You know, we can get in there. I'm just going to tell Sam can't win. I'm going to just tell you all the people who can't win, in my opinion. But yeah, I think whenever you talk publicly, you have to be really careful. And Gabe, like, didn't need Rice that bad. He would have been fine for another 9 days to not blow his game up. Jeff's also getting really involved. I feel like he's blowing up a lot of people's spots this season.
I think that's just who he is. I think he was a radio host for the Ravens before he went out there. And I think his MO is he talks.
No, I'm saying Probst.
Probst was a radio host for the Ravens.
He did Rock and Roll Jeopardy, and he's a big Elvis Gerback fan back when started Survivor. My time period's off, but the joke works.
You and me are the only people who are going to get that one.
There's a lot of that happened here today.
Elvis Gerback. Yeah, no, Probst, we talked about it early on when Rachel tried to sneak the rice in her back pocket. Okay. Did he cherry pick that moment? I thought that like could have really had a negative effect on her game. And I don't know if it actually did or not, but like you just made her like a big threat in front of other tribes. Now I get it, when you're out there and food is so scarce and it's such an integral part of the game, like trying to steal extra food, I get it. Like it is a big deal, but like I felt as though, and how did you feel that at that time he sort of unfairly targeted?
Yeah, I was like, oh, this sucks. And then now anytime our guy Kyle wins another immunity, he's like, Kyle, he holds a freaking press conference for him. He's like, this is your, like, again, there's like so many instances of him. And I'm like, oh, well, at least he's doing it to everyone, right? At least he's like putting everybody kind of out there. But I don't remember him always doing that.
Yeah, he's evolving still. Good. That should be how it goes. At times it's like, what's going on here? And that's fine too, because when it's completely static, anything for that matter is static, it's boring. Still, it's a little like the continuity of it is off, and you want to see something be consistent in terms of fairness, but I digress. The Gabe Sam thing, from my perspective, and maybe it's just the way they edited it before the challenge, it felt like it might have been Genevieve that whose name was more on the block. After the challenge, it somewhat quickly starts becoming Gabe. Do you feel like that outburst, that thing with Sam, actually had an impact on him ending up going, or do you think it just started to happen naturally?
I think it was going to happen anyway. I think we've been hearing Gabe for a while, right? And I think Gabe, he really gives off that energy, the I'm in control, I'm looking for Ida. Like, he's given that off the entire season. It was just a matter of time. He was too big of a threat.
Right. And it was a little unclear to me who actually drove that to be Gabe. Did you pick up on it? It felt like everybody sort of collectively did.
But no, I think everybody was like, okay, it's his time. And yeah, there's less, with the fire at four, there's just less time to make moves. So it, sometimes, like, I think people like all kind of come to the same consensus together.
They came to it together, but it also felt like they came to it individually and then together. Like, Caroline was considering it. Like, Andy's talking about it. Rachel, Kyle had already said, like, everybody's doing it on their own. So it felt like nobody drove it.
Well, and then the interesting thing is there's going to be people who try to take credit for it at the end. And then there's going to be people who say, no, that was my move. And so no one will probably get credit for this, which is, it's interesting to see how it will negatively impact someone who tries to take credit for it.
100%. And that's always interesting at the end is like, you know, I learned the hard way when you try to take credit for something that you had a part of, but it wasn't all yours. That's not a good move. People
want ownership, right? Especially people who are voted out. You got to give them some sort of ownership while maintaining respect. And that's a super delicate balance.
Even if you did the thing, even if you were like the heavy hand in it, somehow people just don't want to hear it, right? Like, how do you actually defend yourself and say, I have a resume? I was reading maybe somewhere, somebody who played said the Survivor resume is a myth. I think it was James from Survivor 43. who cares what he said, but he said it. He said the Survivor resume is a myth. And that was an interesting take. I was like, it really just comes down to who's the most liked. This was, again, an episode where like it seemed like everybody just came to consensus. We've seen Genevieve specifically drive two votes essentially single-handedly. But outside of that, who do you feel like has the heaviest hand right now in the game? Like, who's been doing the most to drive things outside of Genevieve in two isolated pretty much incidents?
It's a great question. Rachel, indirectly. She's just been in it. There's just been action. You know, she got Saul's power. And I just think, actually, you know what? Unfortunately, it's, I don't know if it is Andy. It might be Andy, just his being erratic. He's taking credit for a lot of stuff that he's not doing, but like, I don't know. I would say Rachel, because I'm not giving Andy credit for anything.
Yeah, the Andy edit, well, obviously he's going to the end. Whether he wins or not is a different story, but they are obviously editing him to at least say to us, I am this master player, which if you have watched any seasons of the show before this one, even if you haven't, it's like, no, you're not. He's playing better. Like he is doing what he needs to be doing 100%. Like he's playing well now, but for them to try to make us believe that he's the mastermind is a little insulting, honestly.
I feel like it's tongue in cheek.
You think it's tongue in cheek? Like it's honestly unclear to me.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think anyone respects him. Then I don't think we're supposed to either.
I like him. I don't know if I respect him. I respect the fact that he's doing well now based off where he came from. Maybe I'm a sucker, but I'm sort of believing the edit in terms of, oh, like they're setting him up to potentially really win this game. Do I think that he deserves to? No, but I'm taking the edit at its face value. Like this guy really actually could win.
He's not going to win.
So then that leads into, you can't have a conversation about Survivor with Flip without talking about a win and can't win pick. So give it to me, win and can't win.
Teeny can't win. She's her game is her story. That's her. She's like a journey. There's usually one person who's on the journey. That's Teeny. And then the winner is going to be Rachel. She's got an idol. She has solid relationships. She's not the top target. She's going to probably win the fire. She could win a challenge. I just think she's rootable. I think that she's smart. She's good socially. If she got to the end, everybody's going to like her. They're going to say she played a good game. And I think you got Kyle, you got Genevieve in front of her. Someone else will probably raise their threat level. She can win versus the people who are left, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Kyle and Genevieve in some order are the next two to go.
She can get to five.
She can get to five. I think at six, it feels like it's either Caroline or Sue. Hoping it's Caroline because Sue's been my winner pick from the start. The first five episodes that we had here, somebody on every single of the first five episodes picked Rachel as their winner pick, which was mind-blowing to me, not because she's not a good player, but because that's early in the season. It'd be one thing if she was like dominating later on, which it seems like she's in a good position now, so I get it. But everybody picked Rachel at the beginning. And I think she's a really good player with a good chance to win. Personally, I view her as somebody who will be seen as a threat. She already has, because she had that whole early merge situation where she was sort of just the target, even unintentionally. She's been shown that she can be conniving and people are going to figure it out. I would like to see her win, so I hope they don't. But I think that people are going to figure her out.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a margin of error, right? She's going to have, something's going to have to break her way. I just kind of think that it will.
Yeah, and you got to have some luck in the game. So a surprise question for you. We hadn't really talked since before I moved to Chicago, and I lived there for 4 years. You're from Chicago. And I visited you guys out there, and you lived right next to a place called the George Street Pub, which you took me to. And I moved out to Chicago the next year. I eventually lived in the same neighborhood as you. As it turns out, the George Street Pub is the one Baltimore Ravens bar in Chicago. And I didn't know that until I knew that when I was there. I'm a big Ravens fan. I started going to watch games there. That was the season that they went 14-2 and Lamar won his first MVP. It was like the most fun I've ever had. The weekend before I moved back to the DC area, I watched the Ravens game at the George Street Pub. And that was the game when Justin Tucker hit the 66-yard field goal at the buzzer, the NFL record, to beat the Lions. That was my like last Chicago experience. I'm just throwing that out there because I love Chicago. It's my favorite city. You grew up there. You spent obviously a lot of time there. You don't live there anymore. What's your favorite thing about Chicago now that you don't live there anymore? What's your favorite aspect of it?
Michael Jordan. I would say probably there's like an energy in the city in the summer. And if you're there, there's like, that's it, right? There's like the summer night in Chicago when you're out is like top tier.
Yeah, there's nothing. That's, I tell people, like, Chicago summer is the best time and place you can ask for. The other 8 months are, they're still fun because Chicago is great, but like being inside and cold and dark isn't great. But that summer is amazing. It's where you want to be. If you haven't been to a Chicago summer and you're listening, go. It's a lot of fun, even for 3 days.
Yep. And watch the final tribal council of Survivor of Vanuatu. You can skip the rest of the season.
So random.
It's a good final too.
Love it. I mean, one of the most quoted Survivorisms in this apartment is, put Twyla in a dress because she is a lady. I'll take her to the race. I'll take her out to dinner.
I think the best Twyla line is, it's not the game I wanted to play. It's the game that ended up playing me.
Kerouac, Shakespeare, Twyla.
Twyla should be back though. She's probably a little overcooked, but we should have seen her again.
Drew, thank you so much for coming on. It's been great to catch up. Appreciate you being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Flip.
Hi, I'm Flip, the host of Flippers Always Win. As previously mentioned, we have no sponsorships on this podcast. So, in lieu of an ad, I just burped. I would like to talk to you about the two buzzers that we have in my living room. One's green, one's orange. I got these like 5 years ago through a work project. The marketing person that I worked with brought them in for me so I could run a game where people had to buzz in with the correct answer. And then COVID hit and I just never gave them back to her. This is what the green one sounds like. Well, it doesn't sound like anything because it's broken, which I think I knew, but I had forgotten. And here's what the orange one sounds like. And as I picked up the orange buzzer, Murphy, who was also orange, came over to me and he froze when he heard that noise. So there's a lot of orange going on. All right, everybody, welcome back to Flip Fest 2024. We've got a very special segment coming up. I can't even keep it together in the first 5 seconds.
I was not equipped for Flip Fest. You gotta warn me before Flip Fest.
All right, so here's what we're doing here today. This is a little bit different than any other segment that you've heard, or probably any other segment that's ever been done on a Survivor podcast at all, because I have with me my great friend Wes, who has not once in his life seen an episode of Survivor, has no interest in it. And that's totally fine. But I still am finding ways to keep getting people on this thing, right? So what we're going to do is we're going to make up a tribe of six famous people, either alive and or historical. We have not talked about who these people are. And we're just going to come up with six people and we're going to game it out to the final two. We're going to figure out a winner. We're going to figure out who goes at 6, 5, 4, 3. Play along at home if you want. Who do you think is going to be voted out when? And maybe DM me afterwards with your own thoughts, because there obviously is no right answer here. But before we get started, Wes, how are you doing? Thank you for coming on to Flippers Always Win.
Happy to be here. Happy to be here for Flip Fest 2024. I got my wristband. I don't know about everybody else, but I'm happy.
Well, yeah. And, you know, a bunch of the acts are going to dip and then there might be a fire.
Yeah, but that's what makes Flip Fest what it is. Is that, you know, the flakiness.
It's like a soft calzone, an undercooked dough.
Have you ever had a hard calzone?
Julia ordered one a couple nights ago, and I didn't really have much of it, but I had a bite, and it felt a little, hard, yeah. Just to reiterate, Wes has never seen an episode of Survivor. The most you've seen, essentially, is, I remember a couple of years ago, I showed you a clip. It was from Survivor South Pacific. Mm-hmm. There's a reward challenge where there were roasted pigs.
The pig, yeah.
Yeah, they were hanging from something. Mm. And the point of the reward challenge was they had to use just their mouths to bite off as much of the pig. Remember, they're starving. They couldn't eat the pig. They had to spit it out, transfer it into a bucket. Whichever tribe had the biggest bucket at the end got to take the pig meat back and eat it. And then the losing tribe got nothing after having you know, pork in their mouths, starving for 30 minutes. And you found that a little reprehensible.
Found it tough to watch. Yeah, my only survivor exposure is just buckets of loose pork that have been in others' mouths. But I like the camaraderie. I like the, like, light bullying of Jeff Probst. I enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I like the vacant look in his eyes. I enjoyed all that.
I think there was that was in his vacant era.
Yeah.
He had about 10 seasons there where he was vacant.
He's really disconnected.
Yeah.
I get it. I can get it.
So let's get into it. Let's go back and forth. Any known figure, alive or dead, give me your first one.
Okay, I'm going to open the proceedings with Amelia Earhart. Famously didn't survive on an island. But if we can find her like a crabless island where like the crabs won't eat her, I think she could really thrive. She's a go-getter.
She is. I guess that precludes Eleanor Roosevelt for being on this tribe because they can't all know each other. There has to be no connection. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're looking for non-crab with meals there. I think a lot of people doing this exercise, Amelia Earhart would probably be in like the top 50.
Yeah, it's got to come up.
It has to, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I am going to counter your Amelia Earhart. And I'm going to go with, let's go with Dolly Madison, wife of James Madison, our fourth president. She, in the War of 1812, when the original White House was set ablaze by the British, was it the British or the French? I don't even know. Somebody got up into the trap and made it their trap, right? Yeah. And so she recovered a lot of the original paintings and artifacts from the original White House escaping the fire. So, you know, loyal, resourceful, does well under pressure.
Strong woman, considered what mattered in a time of crisis. That's important.
Overlooked, because James Madison was 5'4", so you know she's going to be overlooked on that island. Mm-hmm. Literally.
I think I'm going to go with Prince.
Oh.
Prince, yes.
This is a small tribe so far. This is a
very short tribe. Lots of short kings and queens. It's good. I'm going with Prince because he's got a mystique about him. Mm-hmm. I think that could benefit him in a lot of ways because people won't know how to read him. And they may not know even where he is at times because he kind of has a way of just disappearing and reappearing.
Right.
Famously.
Is he too much of a social threat? Sometimes somebody can be so obviously the best social threat out there that people are just like, we have to get him out because he'll beat all of us at the end. But Prince, I remember hearing that he was actually a little more quiet and introverted than you might think.
I think so. I don't think he'd be much of a social threat. I think he has a lot of charisma, but I think it's tethered to his guitar. Mm-hmm. And a kind of a persona and character rather than like one-on-one interaction.
Right.
You know, conversational charisma. I don't know how he would fare in that regard.
He has an orb around him, but if you actually penetrate that orb and just talk to him, it breaks down potentially.
Mm-hmm. But he could just play music at you and you'd be hypnotized.
If he can manage to like build a guitar on the island, everyone's screwed. Okay. So my next pick is going to be Mikhail Gorbachev. I don't really know too much about him. I know that he was the leader of Russia. I know Reagan had the whole tear down this wall. I really don't know anything about him, but he obviously was a leader. A little bit of a language barrier might hurt him, but it also could help him. If he's an outcast, sometimes the outcast people are like, that's a number for us.
Mm. I'm going to take one out of your bag because I know your celebrity bag and I know who you enjoy deeply. Mm. I'm going to go Dennis Rodman on this one.
Yes!
I knew he was probably going to show up on your list if it didn't show up on mine, but Dennis Rodman, 100%. If for no other reason, then he's just a complete wild card. A complete wild card. You have no idea what the man's going to do.
None.
He'd be, I assume, a killer in competitions. I mean, the endurance, the strength, the tenacity.
Maybe he is good at puzzles, but puzzles are pretty much the only thing that I could see. It's actually not true because there are a lot of competitions they create out there which don't necessarily favor like a bigger person. And Dennis Rodman is what, like 6'7", 260, yeah. Something like that.
Fella.
At least in his playing days in the NBA, had the endurance of 8 horses combined. Something crazy out there like you've never seen. I love the pick both socially, competitively. You put him anywhere, survivor, not survivor, North Korea, whatever. He's going to be an entertaining fella.
Of course.
Right. Okay. And that leaves me to have the last pick here. And I'm going with Jamie Lynn Spears. Zoe 101, good show. She, in that show, and again, she was acting, but in that show, there was a lot of chaos going on. I don't know if, did you watch that show ever?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, great show.
Childhood classic.
PCA. Yeah, if you want to play, come and play today. Let's just get away. Yeah, I will make you see all the things that you can be. Believe in yourself and follow me. Yeah, yeah. So
you have every Nickelodeon song stored in your head. It's all there. 2005 to 2011, I feel like.
Right. Another one of those things that I can monetize very easily. Another skill that benefits me. Yeah. No, but like in that show, even as you know, the lead actress, whatever, there was a lot of chaos going on around Jamie Lynn, and everybody was coming to her. She is kind of the orb keeping it all together, not necessarily even trying to a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Now, is it just because the show is written that way? Yes. And so anyway, we'll move on here.
I could see a budding romance between Jamie Lynn Spears and Dennis Rodman.
I was thinking Prince.
Prince will romance everyone on the island.
That's true. Except for Amelia Earhart.
We don't know.
That's true.
We don't know what she was up
to. I could see Earhart and Rodman. And that's what I think. I could see Earhart. I mean, Spears and Rodman are the only two that are alive, so they have that in common. Mm.
But I could see Prince and Rodman. I have no idea. There's a lot of potential here, romantically.
Yeah, Gorbachev might be left out, but you never know. Like he had the fire.
Hey, Gorbachev's used to being left out in the cold. You know, he's used to those Russian winters.
That's true.
Getting used to a South Pacific summer. You know?
He invented Siberia. It's just the final six. They haven't previously had interactions. We're just getting down to a final two here, right? And the first immunity challenge is, as it usually is, very physical, grueling. Does Dennis Rodman's alcoholism, does it prohibit him from dominating at
this point? It never weighed on him before, and it won't now.
Okay. I mean,
man's immune to all sorts of intoxication and obliterations. He's going to dominate. I have no doubt about this.
I tend to agree with you. And honestly, I'm also thinking about who his competition is out there. Robin's got immunity for this first one. So we go back to camp and there's five on the chopping block. Who's aligning here? What's the alliances? Who do you see meshing right off the bat?
I'm guessing Dolly Madison will kind of be on the outs to begin with.
Okay.
Due mainly to racism. I don't think Prince is going to vibe with her. You know, she's from an era, the 18th century. Mm-hmm. She probably doesn't have, you know, very progressive thoughts on these things.
No.
I feel like more of the modern era people are going to align. Mm-hmm. They might leave Dolly out in the cold.
So you think Dolly's on the outs.
Mm-hmm.
I see Rodman. First of all, he's got immunity, so he doesn't care to begin with. Now he really doesn't care. He's safe. Mm-hmm. He's not interacting.
He's going to be gone.
He's gone.
He's not going to even talk to anybody.
He's as far away as possible.
You're the game.
That implies that we got Earhart, Gorbachev, Prince, and Spears kind of working together. Now, Dolly's the easy vote. They bring in Rodman for the vote. But a lot of times you see in Survivor when there's an easy vote, especially in the modern era. Does somebody see that as a chance to pull Dolly in and turn it on somebody they see as more of a social threat? If so, who do you see being that cunning, if not overeager player right at the beginning who's like, let me say I'm with the big group, but like, let me pull Dennis and let me pull Dolly in and let's flip this thing.
Mm.
Or is that just not happening?
I think Dennis is easy to pull in if you can find him.
Either.
He's just going to go with the flow.
Right.
I don't think he's going to give a lot of pushback, especially when his position isn't threatened at all.
Right.
So I think someone could easily rope him in. Now, who is that person that's on the outs? It's going to maybe a Gorbachev, you know, maybe a Gorbachev. Maybe he's not liking his position.
Mm-hmm.
I can see him thinking, you know, I'm not vibing with this crew.
Mm.
Prince and Jamie Lynn, they're not big fans.
No.
Of me.
So let's say Gorbachev, he's going to pull in Dolly. He's like, you're the vote. So you need to vote with me. They find Rodman. Can they convince Rodman over Spears, Prince, and Earhart? Or do you think he just goes with the majority?
He's going to flip and flop quite a bit on that because I think both teams are going to be pulling him. And I really don't think he likes to push back against people too much. I think he might just disappear and he may not cast a vote at all.
All right.
Just to avoid the conflict. Because I mean.
So sometimes the actual voting version of that I've seen can be him just putting a vote on somebody else, which creates its own issues. It's not a good move by any means, because first of all, you're showing nobody that you're with them. Mm. Second of all, now you've voted for somebody else and given them a reason to go after you. But do you think that's what he does? Not thinking really clearly, of course.
Can he vote for himself?
He can't.
He can't, because he might do that. He's not going to play a considered, careful social game.
Certainly not.
No, it's going to be chaotic. And that's, I think, going to play to his strengths.
In terms of
my literally zero knowledge of the show.
You did play in that game that I did for my birthday.
I did.
And I've had a couple people on who played in that game. Wes did very well. Wes was actually the only person technically not voted out of that game at any point. He was dragged out. by one at one time in the game, somebody was able to take somebody out of the game with them
by a close friend.
And that was it for West. But everybody else, even the winner of that game, at some point got voted out. So you have some sort of insight here.
I think Rodman's going to align with Prince in the majority.
So are they going after Dolly? They're taking out Dolly?
I think they're taking out
Dolly. And does Gorbachev catch? Do you think Gorbachev like votes for Dolly? Or do you think he like is like, okay, I got to abandon this plan. I got to make it seem like I'm with them.
I think he abandoned.
Okay,
I think he's a shrewd, tactical politician guy. You know, he's going to be willing to abandon that.
We move on to the final five. For time constraint purposes, we're going to do a double elimination here. Generally doesn't really happen on Survivor. Okay, so we have another immunity challenge. This time it is a puzzle. Mm-hmm. This is like a design, like slider puzzle sort of thing. There's some physical aspects to it first. Usually they have to end up climbing a big ladder to get to the top of a platform after their grueling thing, and then they have to do a slider puzzle. And that's sort of the equalizer a lot of times, because a lot of these meathead guys who get up to the platform first can't necessarily do a puzzle.
Mm. I see.
I could do neither, just for where I can't do the grueling and I certainly can't do a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
So who's winning the half physical, half puzzle at the end challenge here?
I think Earhart. I think a favorite's Earhart for the puzzle aspects. I think, you know, she's got kind of a mathematical, logical brain to, you know, pilot a plane, learn the mechanics of a plane. I think that's going to favor her.
Okay, so let's say Earhart wins immunity. We go back to camp. They're made aware at the challenge that it's going to be a double elimination, which, again, this doesn't really happen on Survivor, but for the purposes of this exercise, they are going to know that whichever people in the tribe have the most two votes at this upcoming tribal council get the boot. So not just the person who has the most votes, but the person who has the second most votes.
Mm.
And so that makes things tricky, right? Because that could easily just be one vote from the person who knows that they're going, right? And so who are they going to basically be bitter towards the most? Who are they going to be like, well, if I'm going out, I'm who's getting West in this situation? Who's getting dragged out of the game, even though they didn't necessarily deserve it? So Earhart's immune.
Okay.
You've also got to consider the final three. There's one final immunity challenge coming there. So you're thinking, you know, who are the threats to win that challenge and take my spot potentially? Is Rodman a threat? Do they think somebody else who hasn't won one, are they a threat? They know that Rodman's obviously a physical threat out there. You know, he may not have a chance to win the game, but if you leave him in, he's going to take my spot in the final two because he's going to win immunity again, as long as it's anything like purely physical again, right? So then it really comes down to two things. One, is he even aware of this happening? Two, if he is aware, does he have a bone to pick with anybody?
I think Rodman's probably on the outs, mainly because I don't think he's going to play much of a social game. Once he finds out he's on his way out, he'll probably be partly relieved, because I don't think he's not tolerating it well, I don't think.
No.
I don't think he's tolerating any of it
This is almost exactly what happened to Meta World Peace on Celebrity Big Brother, by the way, which makes the most
sense.
The same person in many ways.
They are, yes.
Meta wanted to be out of there. He asked everybody to vote him out. He was not handling it well. He did not understand the game at all. So Rodman's like,
That's Rodman right now.
Yeah. So he's going to be out, but he has to put a vote on somebody. But he's got three choices. He's got Gorbachev, he's got Spears, he's got Prince, and he's got to pick one to vote out.
I think he's going Gorbachev, because he doesn't know anything about him. I think he likes Prince.
He loves dictators, though.
Maybe he likes Jamie Lynn.
I can see him really liking Jamie Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot.
Yeah.
And Prince, he obviously got down. Gorbachev, he loves a foreign dictator. He loves a foreign leader.
He does, but he already has one.
That's true.
He's loyal to Kim.
That's true.
Flirting with other Russian, there's an alliance there, but there's not. I think he's going to give Mickey the vote.
I agree with that. I think that he is a loyal person, and so he'll see it that way. He may not even know who Gorbachev is. He might think he's Borat, for all he knows. So that may be enough. Who knows? So anyway, so Rodman gets four votes, and Gorbachev gets Rodman's vote. They go to the jury. Mm-hmm. So now we have a final three of Prince, Jamie Lynn Spears, and Amelia Earhart. This is a final immunity challenge. This immunity challenge is one where this is something they do. There's a swirling maze that's like vertical. And the way that it works is you drop a ball in, okay? And there's like little things that click on the way down. It changes the direction of the ball. There's two different ways it can come out. Every time that it goes down, it changes which one. It alternates because of the switch, right? Mm-hmm. You have a hand tied behind your back. You only have one hand. At intervals of like 5 to 10 minutes, Jeff says, you have to drop another ball in. Sometimes this will get up to three or four balls even. Once you let a ball drop, essentially, once it goes to the ground, you're out of the challenge.
Mm.
dexterity, really important, coordination, focus, planning, I would say.
I think it's coming down to Prince and Earhart.
Here. I agree.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think Earhart, in the challenges you mentioned, she's a challenge beast. I think the planning, the executive function there, you know, I think Prince might have a few tricks up his sleeve, maybe. Like, he could figure a couple things out. They're a little crafty. But I think Earhart takes it again, quite honestly. But it could be close.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking it's going to be a battle there. You know, obviously, you got to be pretty dexterous to play that guitar. Mm. Piloting, circumnavigating the globe when nobody had really done it. And as a woman, when women weren't respected. You know, there's a lot there.
There's a lot.
She's a baller. She's a baller. So she wins immunity. To get to a final two, Amelia Earhart will cast the only vote to eliminate, because obviously the other two would vote for each other. Mm-hmm. So if you're Earhart in this situation, you know, most of the time you're taking somebody who you think you can beat. That hasn't always been the case, which is ridiculous. Yeah. Who's she taking with her? Who's she eliminating at this time?
She's probably going to eliminate Prince.
I think she has to.
She's going
to
take him out. Yeah, because I think they just played a close challenge. Mm-hmm. I think it was a tight one. She could have lost it. She sees the threat. She's taking her chances with Jamie Lynn.
Yeah, and it's also like anytime you got like men on the jury, there's a little bit of a fear. Maybe they just vote for the guy, right? Mm. Even if the girl played the better game. Yeah. And Jamie Lynn's a social threat.
Yeah.
But Amelia's now got back-to-back immunities. Prince could obviously win you over. And in just a split second, he could. He could just do a little movement with his face. Mm-hmm. And that's enough to get your vote. Right. And Earhart, she don't got that. She got a lot, but she don't got that. Okay, so our final two is Amelia Earhart and Jamie Lynn Spears. There is a jury of four: Prince, Rodman, Gorbachev, and Dolly Madison. Dolly Madison, who's she voting for? Remember what happened to her in this game. She was ostracized from the beginning, the first out. Mm-hmm. Probably bitter. Didn't have a chance, feels angry. Does she think that Earhart or Spears was more likely to have been the reason for her downfall? Is she impressed with what Earhart did?
I think as a woman who was, you know, battling some ingrained misogyny in society, maybe she votes for Earhart. She's won the challenges. She's shown her capabilities. Maybe she votes for that purely based on Earhart's talents. I don't think she harbors any bitterness. I don't think she really wanted to be a part of the game. I think she was just, you know, thrown on this island. She's like, I'm just getting dragged around. But here I am to cast my vote.
Cast my vote.
It's just a matter of state to her. You know, it's just, you know, a state dinner to her. She just had to be on Survivor.
Yeah, solidarity with the historical woman. She probably views Spears as a little bit of a floozy. And so I will say this about Spears. We haven't talked a lot about her in this game, but I view her as a really big social threat out there. And Earhart, I'm sure she is a social threat, but in a strategy way, in like a powerful way. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you get to this final two, just before we get to the, I agree with Madison regardless. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get to this final two and it's the most likable person out there. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people are bitter with the person who won. Spears won nothing, mm-hmm. but she never had a vote cast against her either. Mm-hmm. Neither did Earhart, but still she's the social threat. Whereas Earhart is sort of the big, powerful, strategic.
Right, right.
So some people might react to that differently than others. It depends on what you prefer in the game. So Madison's voting for Earhart to win. Now we've got Rodman. Who's Rodman voting for? He has to vote for somebody.
Mm. I think he votes for Earhart.
Really?
Oh, no. I think he votes for, sorry. He's voting for the win.
You got this part wrong. You voted for who?
I think he votes for Jamie Lynn.
That's who I was. I think he votes for Jamie Lynn. I think he loves Jamie Lynn. They're the only two that are alive. Remember that. So they've got this connection here. I mean, I don't know if Robin's really alive, but so to speak.
He's walking the earth.
Yeah, anatomically, he's alive. Okay, so 1-1. Now we got Gorbachev. This is an interesting one because I don't think he has anything in common with Spears. Earhart's more his speed, but I could see him being bitter towards her. And not so much Spears, despite not having a connection. So what's most important to this guy, the one who played the strongest game or the person who didn't burn him?
I really don't know if Mikhail Gorbachev has any skin in the game at this point.
That's a great quote. Yeah. Put that on a shirt.
I think he might flip a coin.
I
think he might flip a coin Harvey Dent style.
Mm.
So Batman reference, I don't know.
I was there.
Yeah, you were there. You were around.
I remember it all too well.
Mm-hmm. 10-minute version. Yeah. I think he might flip a coin. I think he's an agent of chaos at this point. You know, he watched an entire empire fall and he watched, you know, America become the only superpower in the world. I think he's just like, this is a silly game. He played the great game.
Right.
And this is nothing.
This is beneath trivial. Him.
Uh-huh.
And you know what? He didn't watch the Zoe 101. So he has really no
connection.
No connection.
No connection to Earhart either.
Yeah. So this coin goes in the air. What does it land on?
Lands on heads.
Which is
he forgot to assign one because he's drunk. He's hammered right now.
I've had much vodka.
And then he just votes for Spears.
2-1. Jamie Lynn Spears. The men vote for Jamie Lynn Spears. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense to me.
So now we have Prince.
So now it's up to Prince. Earhart voted him out last night. Does Prince respect the game that she played? Because let's be real, in terms of like threat level, they were the two big ones out there. They were the two that everybody probably thought the whole time, like these are the two that are untouchable. Spears sort of just was along for the ride, but socially no waves made, which is that's a big part of the game. So Prince, how does he vote here?
I think Prince respects the game. I don't think he harbors any jealousy. I don't think he's that egotistical, but we'll see. I think he votes Earhart. I think he respects the game. He votes for her victory.
Which means we have a tie, which means, and I've thought about this, in this scenario, they bring in a seventh person who didn't play at all to cast the final vote, has no connection. They bring in Jesus Christ. He has no context of what happened in this game. He's not allowed to talk to the jury members. Nothing. He just comes in. He sees Amelia Earhart. He sees Jamie Lynn Spears. Who's he voting for? Who's Jesus decide wins this game? On you, Wes.
I think he votes for Amelia Earhart because he can't comprehend Jamie Lynn Spears' blonde hair. It doesn't make any sense to him. He's never seen anything like it. He finds it to be the devil's work, and he votes Earhart. He likes her goggles.
And then you know what? There have been a lot of moments in Survivor history where maybe somebody who played the stronger, you know, immunity like beast game loses to the social threat. To the viewer, it doesn't come off amazing because we see it more as like Amelia definitely should have won. But when you're out on the island, who's the person that you want to win the most? Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's the Jamie Lynn of the situation, but Jesus wasn't there. So he was never there, and he votes for Amelia Earhart. That's a wrap. Wes, thank you so much for coming on Flippers Always Win. I hope you had a fun time gaming this out. Thanks a lot. And again, I hope that you never watched an episode.
Happy to be here. Never will.
And that is a wrap on episode 10 of Flippers Always Win. Thank you so much to Drew. Thank you so much to Wes. And thank you so much to all seven historical figures who are part of this podcast. Another quick shout out to Sue Smay. We will be back next week, episode 11. We're getting towards the end, folks. It's going to be a fun ending to the season. This does truly feel like anybody's game right now. You know, Andy's getting that big edit, but I could pretty much see anybody winning for the most part if they were able to get to the end right now. And that just means we're going to have a lot of entertainment and be on the edge of our seat right at the end, which is something that we all want and enjoy. Until next time, I'm Flip signing off. And if I had a tagline, I'd say it now.